Coming at you from the AO Studios, it's the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Powered by Riverside FM.
Coming at you live from the AO Studio.
AO.
It's the Fade Route with D and Z. I am D, and we've got a great show for you tonight. Aaron Judge stays hot, CeeDee Lamb gets paid, and Florida State gets embarrassed. Well, we're going to start today with football. We've got a big football show. We'll start off with camps wrapping up last week, players getting cut, and teams deciding who their signal caller is going to be. Mike Tomlin seems to be taking his quarterback decision all the way till the end of the week, while the Pats are going with Brissett, even though Coach Mayo thinks May outplayed him. I don't know. Who starts in Pittsburgh, and is Mayo fucking this up already?
Well, let's start with the Patriots first, since, you know, we'll get them out of the way, and then we'll talk about the team that may or may not contend for a playoff spot. Jacoby Brissett, his passing for the preseason, he was 5 of 14. That's 36%. 36%. So, 36 yards.
In the preseason.
In the preseason. No touchdowns, one pick. His longest pass was 13 yards. His longest pass was 13 yards. Meanwhile,
like 8-year-old.
And he got his shoulder messed up too. This should be very interesting. May, you can't argue with what he gave you, right? 21 of 34, so it's 62% passing. Pretty good. 192 yards, a tutty. His longest was a 29 yard. And his rating overall was an 86.9. So you can't argue that Drake May vastly outplayed Jacoby Brissett. Like, the numbers don't lie, right? It's right there for you. They are giving this kid the Eli Manning treatment. If Jerod Mayo is serious about playing Jacoby Brissett, it's just going to be for a few weeks, until Drake May kind of gets his sea legs under him. And then by week 7, week 8, he's out there. And Brissett, get your gold watch. Thank you for your accomplishments. Thank you for doing what you did. And then, you know, adios. Adios, muchacho. You know, you're a veteran quarterback in this league. You'll catch on. Somebody will need you, right? I mean, Joe Flacco got signed again. So that's all you need to know. There will be a forever home in the NFL for a player like
Joe Flacco got signed again? He's not playing with the neighborhood kids anymore?
No, he's a Colt. He's playing with the neighborhood kids of Indianapolis. So
that's a good spot for him.
It is, because he's going to play. He's absolutely going to play. You look at a guy like James Winston. Like, everybody not named Deshaun Watson is being shopped right now. So there, if you have an arm and if you have a head for the game, you're going to be able to find a landing spot. And that's really what Jacoby Brissett is, right? I mean, you have Joe Milton, right? He played very well. So he is, he's a 6th-round pick. He opened some eyes early.
Oh, right. And they waived Bailey Zappe today, right?
Yeah, Zappe's gone. Yeah, but yeah. We hardly knew you.
Shocker.
Yeah, well, that quarterback class did not do well for the Patriots. Mac Jones, backing up Trevor Lawrence now. So they'll give Jacoby Brissett the burn. They'll let him take the early season beating, and then Drake May will get his time. As far as the Steelers, neither guy is really moving the needle here. Neither guy is really doing it. They split the snaps almost identically, right? They split it almost in half, 50-50, and they matched 3 points. That's bad. Any way you slice it, that's terrible. Now, we know what Arthur Smith is all about, right? Now, Arthur Smith replaced Matt Canada. You know, everybody wanted to blame Canada. If this is the performance that the Steelers are going to get, they're fucked. Like, plain and simple, they are absolutely fucked.
And you got Arthur Smith, FedEx boy.
Well, it goes to show you.
Calling that offense.
Right. Goes to show you, man. Like, we always had that. Who built the offense? Brady or Belichick, right? Like, who did it? Who was it? Was it Arthur Smith or was it Derrick Henry? It was Derrick fucking Henry. That's it. It was Derrick fucking Henry. So.
Just in case anybody was wondering.
Just in case you didn't realize it was Derrick fucking Henry. There's a reason why Ryan Tannehill is a free agent right now. Because he wasn't an idiot. So, I mean, Tomlin's playing it close to the vest. It's hard to say who you would start. Because both of them looked so anemic. I think you probably are going to start Russ because he makes more money. Like, they're really, you know, flip a coin. You know, Russ is going to be 37 years old, I believe. 36 years old. So, let him ride it out early. And then if he really shits the bed, put Justin Fields in. I don't necessarily know if it's going to make that much of a difference. This team, their success rises and falls on two things. Their running backs and their defense. So, you know, I get Coach Tomlin playing coy, but flip a coin. I'll go with Russ.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the value in starting Jacoby Brissett. I don't see the value in starting Drake May because there's not much of a team around him. I'm kind of with you. Let Brissett start the first 4 or 6 games. And then after that, you can, you know, once May maybe has a little bit more hold of the offense, or once we really figure out how this thing's going to churn or how this thing's going to work, then you can put the kid in. I mean, ultimately, he's the quarterback of the future. You don't want to Zach Wilson him, or, you know, you don't want to get him beat up. You just want to make sure when he gets in there, he knows what he's doing. He's a big kid. I think he's 6'4". So I would do Brissett for the first 5 or 6 games until, you know, May was ready or Jacoby got hurt or, you know, there was really a need to make the change. In Pittsburgh, I mean, it's to me, I think we talked about it last week, or maybe I texted you, but I think Pittsburgh should really trade Russell Wilson at this point. Especially, I think the Minnesota Vikings could probably use him, or, you know, another team could really probably use his services.
So you're on board with Mike Tannenbaum. Mr. T said the exact same thing.
Yeah, or maybe send him to Tennessee. I just don't like Fields has the ceiling's higher with him, right? I want to play Justin Fields because I think he could actually play here in the future. Like, I think there's a future here for him, but I've got to see him play. I've got to see him run. I've got to see him throw. You know, I've got to see that. And maybe go get Tannehill to be the backup for Pittsburgh. He doesn't work out, at least I bring in a guy who I know is a better thrower, a guy who can throw. But I think there's upside for him. I think Pittsburgh will be good with Justin Fields. I think what's happened in the preseason is just the preseason. And I think when push comes to shove and Justin Fields has to run around and make a play, I think he can make a play. Can he sit in the pocket and deliver the football where he wants to? Probably not. But what I need him to do is to let the defense work, run the ball, don't turn the ball over, and they can win some games.
But you could do the same thing with Russ, I find. And I think that Russ has a slightly stronger arm. So you could kind of unleash a deeper passing game if Arthur Smith was so inclined.
But don't we know what Russ is?
I think we also know what Justin Fields is at this point.
After 2 years of playing in Chicago, we know what he is.
He's put in the exact same situation. that he's not, this is not setting him up for success.
You don't think there's more talent around him now?
I think there are better running backs. Like Freiermuth, he's an okay tight end. What, Pickens is their best receiver? Would you say?
Yeah.
He's all right. He's not great. Like I would argue it's a parallel move.
Better coaching.
There you go. That's where it is. Now, is Matt Eberflus better than Mike Tomlin? No. Absolutely not. Is the offense going to be more creative? Also, no. Like, we know what Arthur Smith's offense is. It's a run-heavy offense. So
I also think it's harder to throw in Chicago.
Oh, it's
harder to throw. It's harder to throw there.
It's hard to throw in both climates because it's going to get cold. It's cold, it's windy, it's shitty. So it's not, to me, I see this as like a parallel move. Athletically, you're absolutely right. Justin Fields is a better athlete than Russell Wilson. I agree. But sometimes, like, athleticism works against you.
You don't think Justin Fields could Baker Mayfield this?
You mean throw the ball to the other team? Are we talking good Baker or bad Baker?
That's Zach Wilson in the ball. Baker Mayfield last year.
He put him in a better situation.
It just worked in Tampa.
But is it a better situation? Like, I mean, last year, yeah. You're 100% right with Baker Mayfield. You gave him Mike Evans. If I gave you Mike Evans, you'll go be a Pro Bowler.
And Chris Godwin. And White. And Otten.
If I gave you those guys, you would have been a Pro Bowler last year.
Probably.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison because they don't have the same level of receiver. That's just not how Pittsburgh operates. They had Claypool, they had Juju, they had Antonio Brown. Eventually, they work their way out of town. Like, that's what happens with the Steeler receivers. So, you know, I don't know. It's a parallel situation. Either way, I think that the Steeler situation, you know, It's not going to be great until they get a top flight receiver. And speaking of a top flight receiver, guess who got paid? C.D. Lamb. He got his bag, a 4-year deal worth $136 million and a record-breaking $38 million signing bonus, $100 million guaranteed, the second richest non-quarterback contract of all time. So it makes you wonder, what does this mean for Dak Prescott? And what does this mean for Ja'Marr Chase?
Well, I'll start with Chase, right? I mean, this kind of sets the line for him. He's not better than CeeDee Lamb. He's not better than Jefferson. So realistically, what is he looking for? Like, you're not getting it more than $136 million. So what are you looking at? 100, buck 25, 80 guaranteed? Is that what you're looking for now? I mean, I can't imagine that he thinks he's CeeDee Lamb or he should be making more than CeeDee Lamb, right?
No way.
And then as far as Dak's concerned, it's I mean, I have to give the guy credit because he's been a trooper about it. Because I got to be honest with you, if I was him, I really wouldn't have showed up to camp and I wouldn't be playing. Because I'm not coming in here on a 1-year deal. And the whole thing is I'm looking to be the highest paid quarterback in the league. I mean, because there's nothing you can do about it, right? Because if you don't pay me, what are you going to do? So I think with Dak, I would assume his deal gets done before the end of the month. I can't believe that he would go into the season on a 1-year deal with the team in the way they are. I mean, he's coming off one of his best statistical years ever, and it's just like it's time. I'm sorry, like it had to come to this. I'm sorry, Jordan Love got $210 million, but I mean, it's you're going to have to throw it at me because I'm the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm not so sure about that, man, because, like, you're going to – you might have some sneaky competition there, right? You're going to have Dak, Sam, Zach Wilson, whatever, Trey Lance. That was a friggin' unmitigated disaster. He led the preseason in passing yards and rushing yards. Congratulations, Trey. And picks, too. 5 picks in 1 game. Awesome job, buddy.
Did he really? Yeah. Is that true?
It was atrocious. That one performance, like, he led in passing yards, rushing yards, and interceptions. Hell of a year. Hell of a year.
With Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch still have a job.
Oof. I mean, next year, free agency-wise, you're looking at Fields, you're looking at Drew Locke, you're looking at Jarrett Stidham, you're looking at Jameis, you're looking at friggin'... Yeah. They have no choice. They're hell. This is absolutely... You know, they have Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush is available if you want to bring him back again. But they really have no choice in terms of quarterbacks that are free agents. They're not going to draft because that would mean that they're done, right?
Yep.
That means it's over. You can get the immortal Tommy DeVito. Like you can go do that. Which is also weird. There are rumors that the Cowboys would trade Dak Prescott to the Giants. Abso-fucking-lutely not. No way in hell. First of all, the Giants aren't going to take a 32-year-old quarterback who's making $34 million. Like, I mean, that just doesn't jive with what they're doing. The other team is the Raiders. They might. It's not likely, but they might. So your only alternative is to pay this guy. Otherwise, your window slams shut. So, I mean, they're also flying in Dalvin Cook for a workout. Like, they're trying to get this thing going. And, you know, Dak, he's been a good sport. He hasn't been a great football player, but he's been a good sport about it all. So he'll eventually get paid. Everybody eventually gets paid. I'm not concerned about that. Now, you're looking at CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase is a distant third among those three players. Now, granted, he's played a third.
What are your three players?
Of Lamb, Jefferson, and Chase.
Where's Tyreek fit?
Well, I'm just going over the two highest paid and the two highest paid, okay. And then Ja'Marr Chase. Like, Tyreek Hill is in his own stratosphere. He's racing Noah Lyles. That's what's happening here. So as far as that goes, Justin Jefferson has them beat on receiving yards and receiving yards per reception. Like, that's it. But CeeDee Lamb has everything else. He has everything else. Now, Ja'Marr Chase has played a third fewer games. They've played in the 60s. He's only played 45 games. So he's not there yet. He'll get paid. He'll get paid. They all get paid. Has he, based on those numbers, 3,717 receiving yards, 29 touchdowns, which is close. It's actually one fewer than Justin Jefferson. But Justin Jefferson has that one career rushing touchdown. So they're all kind of around the same in terms of productivity. Jefferson and Lamb have just been doing it longer. Chase is going to get his. I can't argue that I should get paid more than CeeDee Lamb. I can't argue that I should get paid more than Justin Jefferson. I can't argue I should get paid more than Tyreek Hill. That's not realistic. I haven't done as much. So this is a prove it year. The Bengals in general have a prove it year. But Ja'Marr Chase specifically has a prove it year. He'll get paid, but
will he play? Because he hasn't practiced. He refuses to practice. So will he play week one?
I don't think so. But then again,
wow.
They also have T. Higgins. So it's one of those things that, okay, fine, cool. You're not gonna play? Cool. T. Higgins is going to get all your... He's going to get all your...
He's not happy either, right? Because he's on the franchise tag.
Hey, you know what? At some point, you know what they're going to do. This is how the NFL operates. Play so well that they can't afford to do this again. So that's what it is. And the price tag just went up, right? Because the franchise tag is the average of the top five salaries at your position. They're going to think twice about doing that. They're going to think twice about putting a second franchise tag on T. Higgins. They're going to think twice about putting the franchise tag on Ja'Marr Chase.
Hey there, NFL football fans. This is the lovely Rita Sanchez, a.k.a. your Option Football champ for the 2023 NFL season. I'm inviting you to join us for the 2024 Option, where we pick the winning teams for each week's matchups and compete against each other to see whose picks reign supreme. Are you in? Head over to CBS Sports and search for the Option 2024 League, or hit the link in the bio on the Fade Route socials and join today. It's for free. Pick a witty name, some winning teams, and I'll see you out there for week one.
What a mess. What a mess. Well, last week, Miami Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa called his former coach, Brian Flores, a terrible person. Coach Flores came out and acknowledged his flaws and said he's growing as a coach and as a person. Tua said this week that Brian Flores has not reached out to him. Should he?
The more I'm thinking about this, the more I'm souring on this. Why did Tua Tagovailoa need to do this in public? Why can't you just, you know, deal with Brian Flores person to person? He may not take your calls, but you know what? That's the risk you take. But to drag this guy in the court of public opinion, you know, that's kind of a low blow. Now, Brian Flores is not doing himself any favors, though, because he's really not talking about it. He went to the Bill Belichick School of Media Relations. So, you know, it's over and it's done. Like, I'm growing as a coach and as a person. So what happened? Well, I'm not going to talk about that. Well, you know, it's Jason Giambi's apology. I'm sorry. For what? I can't say. Just know that I'm really sorry.
No.
I'm just...
Joe.
Just know that I'm really fucking sorry, okay? I'm really fucking sorry. It's just very vague, very cryptic, and this probably should have been done in person, away from the public eye. Because both guys are coming off looking... It's looking a little weak.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he needs to do anything. I think, listen, he's... Coach Flores isn't there anymore. Tua seems to be playing successfully. Everybody's better for it. Like, whatever. He's a terrible person. Okay. You know, you guys can work that out on your own time. I don't think this has to be this whole production thing where we try to figure out how, you know, Brian could rekindle his relationship with Tua. It's over. He's not his coach anymore. He's never going to be his coach again. And... like Brian said, he's like, I need to be better, and I'll be better going forward. There's no reason to rehash whatever's happened. Even if Brian was to call Tua and apologize, it's not going to change the way Tua feels. You're still a terrible person. You're a piece of shit to me, and I'm going to hold on to that. You know, just because he calls and says, hey, man, I'm really sorry about that, or hey, man, why did you have to say that in public? Hey, man, just can you just talk to me about it? That's all... doesn't mean anything at this point.
No.
So I just think that both of them just should bury it, let it go. I mean, I'm not mad at Tua for bringing it up. He's calling him out. He's calling him out, letting him know that, hey, man, the way you treated me and the way you talked to me, that's not acceptable. And I'm going to let everybody know that you were a piece of shit and whatever. And they could do with that whatever they want. And it's like, okay, you know, this is the new NFL. This is the new, like, professional sports. Like, there's no, you can't treat somebody some way without it coming back to bite you in the ass. Like, nobody's just going to take someone being condescending to them or someone essentially being wrong about them without them just throwing it right back into your face. I think we saw a lot of that with Baker Mayfield and Hugh Jackson when, like, you know, he got added as a coach. He was so happy Hugh Jackson was gone. And then when they met up later on, when they were on opposing teams, Baker didn't even want to acknowledge him. He was like, yo, that was your head coach. And at one point, you're just going to treat him like dog shit like that? Like, he drafted you. You know, he was the one that's trying to make you better. And that's just the way it is now.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Have you seen The Bear?
No.
Okay.
No.
So, highly recommended. Definitely watch it. The last episode before they went on the season 3 hiatus, the main character, Carmi, goes to a restaurant that's closing, and he runs into his nemesis, played by Joel McHale. So, and he's really good at it. Like, you know, you think of Joel McHale's comedy, but he nailed this role. So he ran into this guy who was his chef in 11 Madison Park in New York and just ran him into the ground and wrecked his self-confidence. And he had ulcers every day. And he like totally dragged this guy and treated him like shit, you know? So Carmi finally stirs up the courage to confront him. And he says, I think about you every day. To which Joel McHale turns around and says, I don't think about you at all. So that's just the kind of nature. It's that old school mentality. And he said, and this is very telling, and I'm sure Brian Flores would say the same thing, I'd like a thank you. Because I rode you so tough, I made you tough. Like, I made you the person that you are now. Like, I made you resilient. I made you great. You wanted to be great. Now you're great. And ultimately, you do need to leave that kind of toxicity. But there is an element of that there. It's that, okay, you want to be great. Someone has to push you out of that comfort zone. They have to push you out of the echo chamber that just wants to kiss your ass. Like, that's kind of the old school way, but you're absolutely right. Like, we don't operate that way anymore in the NFL. It's very much, you know, pundits, coaches tripping over themselves to anoint people, tripping over themselves to talk about how great players are. Effusively complimentary when nobody asked. So I think it's just a clash of generations. It's a clash of philosophies, because who did Brian Flores learn under? One Mr. Bill Belichick. When was the last time Bill Belichick complimented anybody?
Right.
He dragged Tom Brady. He was dragging Tom Brady. This is the way it used to be. And you know what? It doesn't work that way anymore. And if it does, it's hazing, it's bullying, it's, you know, whatever you want to call it.
It's not accepted.
It's not accepted.
No one's just going to take that anymore. And they shouldn't, to be quite honest with you. But
there's a fine line between hard coaching and that, right?
Right.
You can be coached hard.
And maybe he didn't know the best way to go about it. You know, maybe he was doing what he thought was okay because that's what he learned in New England.
But we're just speculating because he won't talk about it.
Right, right. But, oh my. The college football season started last Saturday with Georgia Tech beating Florida State in Dublin, Ireland. I'm not sure why the Yellow Jackets and Seminoles were playing in Ireland, but it happened. So how bad of a loss was this for Florida State and the SEC, or really the ACC, actually?
I would like to congratulate Florida State for showing up this year. You will not be invited to the college football playoff.
Hanks are showing up in Ireland.
Right. Why are you in Ireland?
Maybe you should just play the game in a domestic state.
Right. You have Georgia and Florida. Throw a dart. Ireland! That's perfect. Was the Champs-Élysées not available? Could you not play there? At the end of the day...
Why not Paris? Why not Frankfurt? Like, what... Why are you playing? I get why Notre Dame would go.
Right.
I can make an argument why, like, a Chicago team would go, maybe a Boston College, a place with some, like, you know, a lot of Irish people, maybe. But Georgia,
yeah, Florida. I don't know.
Really? No? The Seminoles and the Yellow Jackets?
I'm guessing
they're like USC or no.
Maybe they have
why?
Maybe they have why? Robust boosters.
What is the point of that game? Is it to grow college football? Is it to get more people in Ireland to like go to college in the States? Like, what is it so that every Florida State fan and every Georgia Tech fan can go to Ireland to watch a game? Like, I wonder what is the point of that? Like, what are we trying to accomplish
here? It's a great question. It's the same reason why they play hoops on an aircraft carrier. Why are we playing hoops on an aircraft carrier?
Well, that's kind of cool.
I will say that's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. But again, I think they need to get better teams involved. I don't know. Like, I think last time it was like North Carolina. I don't want to say Kentucky.
Yeah.
Or somebody like that.
I mean, you are sending the number 10 ranked team in the country. So I get it. You're not sending Georgia. Yeah, I mean, you did send a team that was on the periphery of the college football playoff last year. This eliminates all of that. There's no more bullshit. No more. We're the uncrowned. You know, no more. You got your doors blown off in your bowl game out of principle, right? Because you pouted and you bitched and you whined and you moaned that you didn't get in. So you took your ball and went home and got spanked. Now it's over. It's over, Johnny. You lost to an unranked team. Yes, you got stung by a game-winning field goal. I understand. Shit happens. A loss is a loss. We don't know what Georgia Tech is going to be. Clearly not really thought that high if they're not ranked. But you don't have a leg to stand on. No. Absolutely not. Now, that being said, they didn't play badly. Right?
Ujulele came down to the end, right? Yeah. It's like a field goal.
Ujulele played well. I mean, Florida State has no running game to speak of. So there were, you know, no passing touchdowns in this game, period. So you had four touchdowns, four on the ground. Five touchdowns. You know, they were all on the ground.
Man, I'm glad I showed up in Ireland to watch this game. Yeah.
So I can't wrap my mind around it. And, you know, what does it mean for the ACC? Your one chance of respectability is done. It's over. So you ceded your last spot to either Michigan or Notre Dame. Or maybe SC if they ever get their shit together. Like, this is while the college football playoff is decided in December, it's really decided now because every game in college is scrutinized that much.
Well, the only thing is like they're going to win the ACC, right? I mean, we're pretty confident there.
Yeah.
So they're still going to get a shot at being in the college football playoff.
It is expanded, so they there's a chance.
Yes, that too. It's expanded. So they'll get exploited too if worse comes to worse. I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand why they went to Ireland to play this game. So confusing.
It's the same reason why the NFL keeps going to London, why they're going to Brazil this year.
No, it's not, because the NFL is trying to grow the sport. You're trying to get people interested in other countries. This is college football. Do you think someone in Ireland watched that game and was like, man, I want to play college football? Do you think someone watched that garbage and said that? Do you think they were trying to get autographs from children on the field? Do you think that was what was happening there? Do you think, oh, man, I can't wait for Florida State to come back to Ireland again? You think somebody said that after they left the game?
I hope not.
Or do you think they walked out of the same like, what the fuck did I just watch?
Well, they did get a good game. So there's that. But it is completely disconnected from... It was a travel ad for Ireland. Like, yeah, Jesse Palmer and Joe Tessitore, you know, drinking Guinness on
What are they going to do? Play in Prague next year?
I mean,
are they going to go to Honduras after
send
that?
The hockey team
to Prague. Are they going to play on a cruise ship? Like, I just don't understand what we're trying to do here. Like, I don't know. It just seems silly to me.
Well, you do. I mean, there's always the gambling angle that you have to, think about. I'm sure there are plenty of people abroad who like to bet on college football. And
you think so?
I'm sure. And there are plenty of boosters from around the world, right? Just because, you know, this is Florida and Georgia Tech, that doesn't mean that somebody didn't come here from Ireland, get their degree, and then go back.
You know, highly unlikely, sir.
Eh.
Highly unlikely. Highly unlikely. A very small percentage chance of that one. I don't know. That's a little out there.
I don't know. But
I don't know. You can't help but smile when you see a balloon. PopStarsBalloons.com offers spectacular balloon decor for all of life's events, specializing in custom balloon creations and installations for private events, corporate and school functions, photo shoots, brand events, and fundraisers. Led by certified balloon artists, the PopStars Balloon team shape balloons into custom works of art. PopStar Balloons provides full concept balloon design, build and installation services, as well as pre-assembled decor pieces available for pickup or delivery. PopStar Balloons is a woman-owned, small family business focused on providing professional balloon services using only high-quality, 100% biodegradable natural latex balloons made in the U.S. and Italy. They consistently prioritize the safest use and handling of balloons in a sustainable and responsible manner. PopStars Balloons is located in Westchester County, New York, but likes to party at events throughout New York City, Connecticut, Long Island, and New Jersey. PopStars Balloons can also accommodate balloon decor services for destination events. No event too big, no event too small, and their custom personalization service is the perfect touch. They also offer a full line of event decor options like backdrop, prop rentals, tablescapes, dessert table setups, custom signs, and they always deliver with a smile. Whether you're looking for gift balloons, classic decor, or large-scale design for a big impact, PopStars Balloons will create the perfect decor for your theme, vibe, and space. So if you have an idea in mind or need inspiration, PopStars Balloons decor will be the cutting edge and spectacular. Visit PopStarBalloons.com to pop your next event.
But you know what's not out there? Aaron Judge, he's been scorching hot this past week. He's hit six home runs in his last seven games. He's currently on pace to hit 63 to break his own American League record. He is the best hitter in baseball. Or is he? In the National League, Shohei Ohtani's batting .292, has 40 stolen bases, 41 home runs for this season and this season only. Okay? This season and this season only. Who would you rather have on your team down the stretch and into October?
Shohei. Shohei all day. Man hits home runs, steals bases. I mean, I feel like he impacts the game this year more than Aaron Judge does. You, what about you?
Okay. So, Aaron Judge beats him in average, on base, slugging, OPS, home runs, ribbies, everything. Like, I'm not even talking about war. I'm not even talking about OPS plus. All the ones that we readily know. The only one that Shohei Ohtani is better than Aaron Judge in this year is stolen bases. And that's because Aaron Judge is built like a fucking linebacker. I wouldn't want him trying to steal a base. Now, Shohei Ohtani can only affect you on the bases and at the plate, right? He's not offering any defense. He's not offering pitching, right? That's the key of the this season and this season alone. Yes, long term, you can't dispute what Shohei Ohtani offers you because Aaron Judge doesn't pitch like Shohei Ohtani does. But realistically, you get five at-bats a game, probably. That's the only way Shohei Ohtani is going to impact the game. Judge will give you five, plus he'll give you nine in the field. And he's not a bad defender. He's actually a very good center fielder. For a dude his size, it's impressive how he can go get the ball. He gets the ball. And he's got a cannon for an arm. So yeah, Aaron Judge is, you know, he's feasting right now. And the other day, Soto and Stanton were feasting around him too. So that's the key. If all three of them are able to kind of feed off of each other, the Yankees can become very scary in the postseason. Pitching is still a problem, but that becomes more of a formidable lineup if they're all humming. But what you have to worry about, come October, if I'm the opposing manager, if there's a base open, I'm sticking up four fingers and I'm putting his ass on base.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I mean. Like, you can pitch around Judge. You could work around it. You can't pitch around Otani. You can't put him on. It'll take second. Now you're in real trouble.
Well, hang on. He's only walked 69 times this year and he struck out 129 times.
Who's this?
Otani. That's, yeah.
Who struck out more?
Judge, but only by 7 times. Only 7 more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 136 strikeouts, Aaron Judge has also walked 107 times.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little something to kind of take into account. Now, like, 16 of those have been intentional, whereas only 8 have been intentional for Shohei Ohtani. Now, is that a product of Freeman being hurt, Mookie Betts being hurt, that Dodger lineup being decimated at points? Probably. And this, Judge's 16 walks are definitely a product of the Yankee lineup being a shambles. So you got to figure, either way, you're going to be very pleased with the results. I like the defensive aspect personally, but
Well, Otani has a chance to become a 50-50 guy. That's crazy.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would absolutely be great if he could. There's only two. It would be him and nobody. So that's it. Like, right now, it's him and Jose Canseco. So, like, congratulations on that. So, now, he doesn't have the juice scandal. He just has the betting scandal. So, I wonder if he took the over on steals this year. But, it is impressive, though. 40 steals, only been caught 4 times. So, he knows what he's doing out there. But, it's definitely one of those things that it depends on who's hitting behind him and, the situation as well. So,
sticking with baseball, the Seattle Mariners fired their manager, Scott Servais, Thursday, as the team saw their 10-game lead in the West turn into being 5 games behind the Astros. Scott Servais served the team admirably for over 8 years, but had nothing to show for it. They're currently 6.5 games out of the wild card and 4 games back of the Astros. Can they catch the Astros? But really, what's next for the Mariners?
Well, right now, it's Dan Wilson as manager. It's Edgar Martinez as hitting coach.
Dan Wilson, former catcher.
Former Mariner catcher. Yep. Former Mariner catcher. So, can they catch the Astros? They're only 3 games back. Now, they're only 2 games over 500. The Astros were only mostly dead. We were absolutely, spot on about that. As a team, despite what they did to the Mets, right? The Mariners destroyed the Mets. So what does that really tell you about the Mets? But they are 30th in the league in batting average. 216. Ugh. You have a lot of teams that are around the 220, 230. But that's atrocious. 364 slugging, 303 on base. Good for 29th and 26th respectively. And they've only scored 521 runs. They're sporting the best ERA in the American League. They're sporting the best. They're sporting the best whip. They're sporting the best batting average against. They're sporting the best number of quality starts.
Really?
Yeah. So, if it was Maddux, Glavine, and Smoltz, it wouldn't fucking matter. Like, they're getting it from Wu. They're getting it from Kirby. They're getting it from Castillo. They're getting it from the guys they're supposed to be getting it from. The offense is not doing jack shit. Nada. Cal Raleigh is leading this team in homers with 27. Big dumper. His average is 211. We like to call that Joey Gallo territory.
Not even hitting his weight.
He's not even hitting his weight. Big dumper is not, you know, not at all.
Is Jerry DePoto going to lose his job?
Oh, at some point, he's got to, right? Like, how many times is this going to happen?
Should they sell the team? Should the owner sell the team?
I don't think so, because each year they try, you know? They're trying. They've built a good pitching staff. They've built a good pitching staff. Now, you have to somehow convince Edgar Martinez to stay there full time and be the hitting coach. Because when he was the hitting coach, they were actually pretty good.
Well, what happened to Julio Rodriguez, man?
Well,
11 home runs.
That's it.
What is that garbage?
I mean, he's been battling injuries all year.
The ballpark too big?
That is a big ballpark. But you know what? Cal Raleigh's got 27 homers. Like, he can hit him out. So maybe Julio Rodriguez, a game of adjustments. Maybe he needs to make a few adjustments. And, you know, they did sign him to that long-term extension. Maybe he's pressing a little bit to try and live up to those numbers. Who is really helping them is Randy Arozarena. That turned out to be a smart addition, right? That ballpark's not too big for him. Right, so
yeah, but what is he batting, 216?
Right, he's not doing much better. But if you're looking at it, he's at least,
that might be a good thing for them to have him next year, because I think he's got like 2 or 3 years left in his deal.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I have a lot to say here. I actually like Jerry DePoto. I do think he knows what he's talking about. I think he knows baseball. I'm a big numbers guy. You know, I believe in Moneyball and all that stuff. But
is this Moneyball, though?
It's not Moneyball, but I do believe in his the way he values players. The Julio Rodriguez thing, that's the problem. That guy was supposed to be like a 30 or 40 home run guy. He's 11 home runs.
Yep.
And he didn't steal any bases this year. He's got like 11. I think he only has like 11 or
he has
10 steals.
18 steals.
18 steals. Dude, where are you? What did Acuna have last year? 70?
70.
50?
70.
Where are you at? If you're not hitting home runs and you're not stealing bases, then what the hell are you doing here? No? Am I wrong?
No.
Like, you're supposed to be the guy we're building around. You're supposed to be the guy. And you're not doing anything.
What I don't understand about the structure of this team is that you strip this damn team down. You had Eugenio Suarez, right? You had, you know, you brought back Mitch Haniger. I don't understand the moves. You cut Ty France loose. Ty France only had 3 fewer home runs than Julio Rodriguez. I don't understand. You brought in Luke Raley. Luke Raley turned out to be good. Jorge Polanco turned out to be a good move. Mitch Garver is eh. So,
Mitch Garver's trash.
It's always one step forward, 2 steps back with Jerry DePoto.
But you had a 10-game lead. You had a 10-game lead. And the Astros, they just got Justin Verlander back. They lost all their pitchers. How do these bitches have a 4-game lead on you? And where the hell are the Rangers? Like, this was the year. This was the year the Astros lost all their pitchers. They were hurt. The Rangers were trash. The Angels lost Ohtani. The Angels lost Trout. This was the year. This was it. It don't get easier than this. Not only can't you win the division, but you can't even get the damn wild card.
Nope. Nope, not at all. And, you know, the Rangers are 11 games over 500. Allegedly, there's a wild Jacob DeGrom on the loose. He may be coming back. So you might get passed by the Rangers. So you may very well get passed by the Rangers. Now, yeah, this was tailor-made for them. This was tailor-made for the Mariners. They got off to a hot start. They were smashing the ball. And then it just died. It died a friggin' death.
It died like a dog.
It died a death. And that falls on Scott Servais. That falls on the hitting coach. And ultimately, that should fall on Jerry DePoto. Now, if Jerry DePoto isn't going to get fired, right? Here's why he's not going to get fired. Perry Manassian got an extension for that mess with the Angels. Why am I going to fire the GM of my team who has my team over 500? I don't understand it. I don't understand what the Angels are doing. So, I'm going to keep the guy who is the architect of this team. And he needs to tweak it. He needs to try and fix it again. The pitching is not the problem. You built a formidable staff. Now you need to fix the problem. The problem is J.P. Crawford's not hitting. Rodriguez isn't hitting. Mitch Garver is meh. You have no infield to speak of. You have Dylan Moore, Jorge Polanco, Leo Rivas, Josh Rojas, and Justin Turner.
Who?
Precisely. Everybody, Jorge Polanco I know, Justin Turner I know. Everybody else, what the fuck? You brought in a Rosarena. A Rosarena has 17 home runs. He had 15 when he got here. So yeah, he hits them far. He's only hit two of them. Canzone, we'll see what Canzone is. Haniger was great before you traded into the Giants. Like, what the fuck, man? You brought him back, he hasn't been the same. Rayleigh's been good. Victor Robles, you went and got the scraps from the fucking Nationals. Like, that was your idea. You need more, you need better. And Jerry DePoto, he's absolutely on the hook for this, but Scott Servais is not without blame. And we also have to credit the Astros. Right? The Astros could have packed it in. First-year manager in Joe Espada. You got, Verlander hurt. And Valdez spent time on the IL. And McCullers is hurt again. And just go down the line. Like, we don't need to talk about all the myriad of injuries the Astros have. They're back. They're back, and they're pissed off. Great. Just exactly what you want. And they're primed to make a playoff run. And the Mariners are once again left holding the bag.
Need some last-minute fantasy football advice? Then the boys at the Fade Route have you covered. Check out Red Light, Green Light 1-2-3 with D and Z every NFL Sunday, noon Eastern, during the regular season. D and I give you our top 1-2-3 fantasy starts or green lights, and our top 1-2-3 fantasy sits or red lights. That's red light, green light, 1-2-3 with D and Z every NFL Sunday, noon Eastern, during the regular season. That's red light, green light, 1-2-3 with D and Z. It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the in crowd? Well, you know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutpodcast, or drop us a line on X at faderoutdnz, and you could be next.
Joining us on the In Route today, we have the author of The Snap, Elizabeth Staple. Hi, Liz. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for coming on.
Elizabeth, how's it
going?
Thank
you for having me. Good.
So we'll start you off with this. Before becoming an author and a lawyer, you worked in media relations for the New York Giants, New England Patriots, and the Frankfurt Galaxy. When you were in PR, social media was not the giant it has become today. So what are some of the challenges you think PR departments face with players on social media?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, like you said, it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's a part of everybody's lives, and athletes are people just like us. So you can't just say, don't use social media. It's just not realistic. So I think you kind of look at this blurred line between what's their professional self and what's their private self. Like, when are they acting as an ambassador of the team and when are they acting as their own selves? And you see, even recently, there are things that athletes and people around them may think are private, like liking a, you know, a tweet or a post on a, by a political candidate or something like that. You think it's going to be a private act, that becomes a whole thing. I think it's interesting seeing the way that certain athletes are using social media to their advantage in their contract negotiations. CeeDee Lamb maybe tweeting at his owner an LOL there and coming out with the last laugh with that contract. But I think another big part of it is the part that's not in their control at all. So I heard Saquon Barkley say on the Scoop City podcast that when he left the Giants, he had planned to do like the walk out the door, thank you for everything tweet, right? Like, I had a social media post teed up. But once the word got out and he started seeing the reaction on social media of, you know, like the basement dwellers, the worst of the worst, he got so mad that he canceled his planned social media post, like to go out the way that he had planned to go out, the way he wanted to go out. And so kind of in anger, because you're really overtaken by this deluge, you really can't avoid it. It impacted the way that he exited the team. And he said in the podcast that he regretted it. He wished he could take that back. I think like the mental health and just the day-to-day functioning of athletes with social media and the amount of opinions they have coming at them from everywhere and the like strength of character to not respond minute to minute is a real challenge. And then the third part of it is the stuff that they, you know, like the Dumois world where you're on social media, but you didn't mean to be. Like, you thought you were in a private place, but someone else films it and puts it on. And I think it's really extremely hard because no one is like a perfect camera ready person all the time. And it's such an impossible standard they have to live under. I think most of them do pretty well most of the time.
Yeah, I think it's hard to really separate the business and the personal, and it's mm-hmm. hard to see things on social media and not take things personal. And then it's like, for you, you're a person, you want to share things like everybody else does. You don't think about your athlete status, or, you know, you don't think of your celebrity, so to speak. And something you might think is funny could be hurtful or could be taken the wrong way. And then it's this whole thing that you've got to explain. And then it's just like, why am I even bothering doing this? Yeah, I think it's incredibly hard to keep up with the times and also walk a straight line.
Definitely. And I know, I'm sure you've had the same. I know there's things that, you know, I've made a joke that didn't land the way I wanted it to, or I've said things that after the fact you wish you could take back, and I can, because who am I? But for them, it becomes like part of their public persona that they really can't scrub off.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, once you hit that button, once you hit that send,
Totally. Inferring tone and sarcasm is always something very interesting. I don't know if you heard it a couple weeks ago when Luis Severino was being interviewed, and there was a snarky comment that he made that was delivered by the media as literal. So, like, you can't really infer tone. It's one of those things, and, you know, it's written word at the end of the day. Like, it's like an X post. You're going to infer the message that you want to infer. Maybe not necessarily what the athlete had intended.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
And then, you know, in Hard Knocks with the New York Giants, we've seen the PR department prep GM Joe Shane before talking to the media. They let him know questions he might receive, how he should answer them, what he can expect. But how many times do you watch a press conference and cringe at the things players or coaches say, like, oh, that was the wrong way to go there?
You know, I think more often than not, it actually goes the other way. And I'm really impressed with how poised a lot of them are, because as you can already hear in this podcast, like, I do not operate at that level. So I think they do a really good job. Especially like anytime I'm watching a college athlete, I think that's so impressive. Anytime I'm watching an athlete that's doing an interview in a second language, you know, where English is not their native tongue, that is everything you were just saying, Anthony, about like inflection and, you know, idioms and things that are so specific to a language to be able to speak on camera and make it sound good, I think is really impressive. You mentioned Hard Knocks. Like, I've been watching Caleb Williams on there, and obviously, you know, that's a young man that doesn't have a lot to feel insecure about. He should be pretty confident, but he just has such a like easy way about him. And I think it's so impressive. And then the flip side of that is, so I worked with the Giants and while Eli Manning was there. And if you think about the way Eli Manning presented as a player, and how just like dry and straight he was at all times, which was a very calculated strategy, right? He didn't want to get himself in any trouble. He wanted to be sort of uninteresting in his interviews, and compare that to how he is now, yeah, you know, on the Manning cast and his general like social media presence, which is still not, I'm sure, exactly who he is as a person. It's still a character, but I think it's a lot closer to who he actually is. It's kind of interesting the way that players take like a very calculated approach and how they want to present.
Yeah, and it's interesting because like the player Eli Manning, I much prefer the retired Eli Manning. I think he's hilarious. I enjoy every insight he has. I enjoy all the things he says. But as a player, I thought, like you said, he was dry. He was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. Well,
you know, Derek Jeter also, he presents very well on social, yes, media too. Like, he's very like buttoned up, straight laced, you know, like keep to the, you know, keep everything close to the vest. And now all of a sudden he's a girl dad. He paints the, you know, he gets his fingernails painted, yeah, by his daughters. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's more whimsical.
He is the other quintessential example. So my husband is a sports writer. He covers hockey now, but he used to do a bit of everything. And like Derek Jeter would make him crazy because he would not ever say one interesting thing, which is the entire point, right? He doesn't, right, want people buzzing around him. So he pulled that off very well.
Yeah. So moving over to NFL Europe, you know, we both shared time there. And the, mm-hmm, league folded in 2007, ending a quarterback farm league that received little coverage. But over the past 10 years, there's been a commitment from the NFL to have regular season games played in Europe. And last year, the Chiefs actually played in Frankfurt. So how did it feel to see football back in Germany?
I mean, I was thrilled to see it. I want to hear your thoughts as well. I'm hoping you were too. I think it's really cool to see them finding like new venues and new audiences. And Frankfurt was especially cool because maybe this is very self-aggrandizing, but I feel like we helped build that. Like, I remember seeing, like, on the Jumbotron during a drive, they would have the rules of the game on the Jumbotron to try to teach the crowd in English, which is interesting, but they would try to teach the crowd what was going on. Or, like, when we were on offense, they would have the cheerleaders with their finger to their lips telling them to, like, be quiet because we were on offense. And so thinking about, and that was after 15 years of the league, by the way. It's not like it was the inaugural season of NFL Europe.
Right.
But to think about like how far they've come and how passionate and invested those fans are now, I think it's really cool. They deserved to have an NFL game there. I'm really happy for them that they got to have something at that level. How did you feel about it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was special for me, especially, you know, going back to the old stadium, yeah, and just bringing back all those really great memories. And just kind of like you saying, it's like, wow, it actually came full circle. Like now, mm-hmm, they're playing games that, not that our games didn't matter, the games in NFL Europe 100% mattered. There was a bunch, mm-hmm, of players that played for NFL Europe that winded up going to the NFL and winning, mm-hmm, Super Bowls and being real contributors to teams. But this was a regular season game that counted for the National Football League, mm-hmm, and it was played in Frankfurt. And you know, of course, I'm biased. I think the fans in Frankfurt are the best football fans. It's one of the best cities to watch a football game. Mm-hmm. So to all see it all come full circle, I mean, I wish I could have been an even bigger part of it. But I know we both know people that were a part of it and were there. Mm-hmm. And it was really great to see on TV.
I really love for them. I don't know if you know, keeping up through Facebook groups and things, but even after the league folded, so we were the Frankfurt Galaxy. And they had some version of American football in Europe, in Frankfurt after that. And to avoid the IP concerns, they called it the Frankfurt Universe, but they used the same logos, the same jerseys. Like they just kind of rolled it all in to the universe, which I love.
Yes, I think I still follow that group. I think I've seen, yeah, pictures of it all the time. I think I see like the cheerleaders and I see social events they did or do. But yeah, I mean, it was great traveling through Germany, getting to go to Dusseldorf, Hamburg, and even, mm-hmm, going to Amsterdam and Berlin. Playing in Berlin was, for me, something I'll never forget because we got to go on a great tour by the general manager of the Frankfurt Galaxy at that time that kind of gave us a little bit of a history lesson, which really, mm-hmm, blew up my mind, and I think it blew a lot of the players' minds where, you know, we really recounted the things that happened during World War II and leading up to World War II, and Germany's part in it and his family's part in it, which I thought was, mm-hmm, incredible.
Yeah.
And you gotta love a league that's just running up against a cease and desist. And it's just like, bitch, it's like right up against it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're being
not relevant to get sued.
No. Yeah, no. Just ask FCK Clouds Gil Godoy. What's up, brother? And we're being joined again by Penguin Random House author Elizabeth Staple, author of The Snap, available at Amazon, your local bookstores, and on Audible as well if you are a fan of audiobooks. So, Liz, your novel The Snap is truly a murder mystery set in a pro sports arena, not a pro sports book trying to be something else. So given your experience in the background of pro sports, what sent you in the murder mystery direction, and who are your literary inspirations?
Well, I'm a big reader, first and foremost, and I try to read a little bit of everything, but definitely my like highest volume genre are mysteries. I really like mysteries and puzzles, and in terms of writing, it's kind of a cool challenge to, as you're doing draft after draft, loop back through and make sure that the clues are kind of threaded in there so that the reveal feels really earned when you get there and not out of left field, but it's also still a surprise. I thought the NFL would be such a cool setting because, number one, I hadn't seen it before in this kind of book. So that's a nice change from a traditional, you know, locked room. There's only so many bachelorette parties on an island that you can read about where there's a murder. But also, you know, the product of the NFL, what's on the field, is one of these things that's known to basically everyone in the world. But what happens in the front office, you're kind of aware that it exists, but you don't really know the particulars of what it looks like back there and how it works. So I thought that would be a really different and interesting place to set it. And I've definitely been out of that world for quite some time, but I have enough friends that are still hanging in there, has been hanging in there, that they were able to confirm for me that not too much has changed. And in terms of literary influences, I really like, this is reaching it back a little bit, but I really like Ira Levin, who wrote things like The Stepford Wives, Rosemary's Baby. His novels at this point are 50, 60 years old, but you read those characters and just feel like they're sitting in a room with you. They feel so real. And then more contemporary stuff. I really like Mick Herron, who, I don't know if you've ever watched Slow Horses on Apple TV, but his books are the books that that series is based on. And they're just like rapid fire, really quick dialogue. You have to pay a lot of attention. You're kind of like three lines later when you realize the joke that you missed three lines prior and you kind of like laugh at it to yourself. He's a really great writer. So I try to get to 80% of what he hits.
Nice. I also am a pretty avid mystery reader, so I would highly recommend the Cotton Malone series by Steve Barry. And there's also,
oh, I'm gonna write it down.
Yeah. There's like 18 books. Like it's a huge, huge series. Nice. And, also the Vatican Archives series, which is really good too. It's a little bit shorter than the Steve Barry series. Mm-hmm. So like if you're into any kind of like historical fiction, mm-hmm. like it's a great little twist there.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. I will check it out.
Definitely. Now, The Snap alternates between past and present as the main character, Poppy Benjamin, wrestles with the concepts of control, perception, image, both personally and professionally. So everything has to convey the right message, from her clothing to her body language to her reactions. So all the while she's coming face to face with sexism and harassment, you know, of being a woman in a so-called man's world. So how much of that did you personally experience, and how did you deal with that?
I would say, other than the dead body part of it, like, essentially everything in this book is something that happened to either me or a good friend. And I want to make sure to put in the caveat that that is not to say I didn't enjoy my time in sports, because I really genuinely did. And that is not to say that, you know, people I worked with are horrible monsters, because they weren't. I like many, many, many of them, definitely vast majority. But just like to set the scene a little bit, for example, when we were with the Galaxy, I was 23 years old. I was the only woman working for our team, and we were living in a hotel in Germany. And at that time, I think I could Skype with my friends and family, and that was like the only way to like interact from Germany. So you're pretty cut off. And it just felt like there was no one that I could be around that was just a neutral, like benign presence. If I was spending any kind of time just like chit-chatting with someone, it became a bit of a rumor. Like there was a person on our staff who maybe didn't click with everyone else. And I hate to see that. So I would kind of hang out with that person and try to make them feel a little more included. And I think it was like a week later at practice, one of the coaches said to me, like, so your boyfriend, so-and-so. And I was like, what are you talking about? I think I ate a roll with him once. It was just like, there was no way to just like sit on a bench and not have it be some kind of like active choice I was making to sit with this person. Or I remember being on the team bus and it was like all the window seats were taken. Okay, so I'm going to have to be the one person that buddies up with someone. And I chose to sit with a particular player, frankly, because he was the smallest player and we would be able to fit most comfortably in a bench. And when I sat down, he said something like, oh man, like there was this time at a bar that there was a girl and we were all talking about who she was going to go home with. And then when she like went with our punter, whatever, he said like, oh, she picked me. And he was like, and you picked me. And I felt like saying, you are literally the smallest guy here. Like that is the reason that I'm sitting here. Or, you know, just another, these are like harmless little examples. True. These aren't bad people. They're just like, it's just the way it is. We did training camp in Florida. We lived in a hotel in Florida, like not a fancy hotel in Florida. And a week into camp, one of the coaches pulled me aside and he said, I've been watching your plates and you like to eat really high. And I almost died. I mean, I would die at this age, but at 23, I almost sank through the floor. He said, I've been watching your plates and you like to eat really healthy. Good for you. And he said, but you like those rolls. And I don't think I had another like piece of bread for like the next month because I felt, God, coach is going to notice if I eat the bread. Like just the absurdity of that, right? We sit here and we laugh at it, but at that age, it felt so huge. Or, you know, you mentioned that trip that we went to Hamburg and like, that was awesome. When we're playing in these incredible soccer stadiums. I mean, to get to be on the team level of those stadiums is such a cool experience. But in Hamburg on the team level, they did not have any women's bathrooms. And so I remember asking a security guard, like, where can I go to the bathroom? And he pointed me to the cheerleader's locker room. And so I had to walk through a bunch of like naked cheerleaders to go use the bathroom in my suit. And I know that's like a funny story now, but at the time it just felt like I'm genuinely going to miss being where I need to be for my job because I have to go so far afield to find the bathroom. You know, or on that same train to Hamburg, we had an entire car of the train to ourselves, right? And I'm the only woman sitting in the car and the conductor comes through and it might have been you, Damien, because you're ops saying like everyone in this car is part of our team. And the conductor said, great, and came directly over to me and asked for my ticket. I was like, dude.
It was me.
It was you.
It was me.
So just little things like that, that I get it. I understand where he's coming from, but also could you think of a worse place to hide if I was trying to hide than in that car where I'm the only woman in the car and everyone else is, you know, a football player, team employee.
Right.
Just lots of things. I mean, I could probably name 50 or 60 examples of things like that. And they're funny. They're not horrible. I'm not like sitting here crying, but piled up, it definitely wore on me, especially at that age. And a big reason why I wrote this book in two timelines was because I thought back on so many things and was like, God, I would handle that so much differently or so much better today. You know,
just because you're more mature or just because you of what you've experienced?
I think probably more mature because a good deal of it is my fault as well. I feel like there are times when it just could have been like more, I could have handled things better. Like there's an example that like really does stick in my craw because this kind of crosses the line more. There is a player that I needed to be at interviews. This is not a player who could choose not to be at interviews. And, you know, all of us were in NFL Europe because we wanted to catch on in NFL proper, right? So it's very important to do your job well. And if this player doesn't show up to the NFL Network meeting, it reflects really poorly on me. And he had missed the previous week. And I was explaining to him that I really need you to show up. This is part of your responsibilities. This is part of my responsibility. You really need to be there. And he made, I don't know what your language barriers are in your podcast, but he made an extremely crude remark to me. Mm. And I just kind of like blinked at him. Like I didn't know what to say. I like blushed like crazy. I just kind of like slunk away. And I'm so angry at myself now that I didn't have a stronger reaction to that. Not that just to look someone, you don't have to start screaming, but just to look someone in the eye and be like, hey, that's unacceptable. You know, the way I talk to my 5-year-old now, things like that I just could have handled better. And then things that are entirely on me, where I remember a player made a really nice comment to me and said, hey, when we're in Germany, you can come hang out with us. And in my, you know, 23-year-old insecurity, I think I said, oh, thanks. Like, instead of just being nice and saying, hey, thanks for inviting me along, I had that like sarcasm barrier up.
Yeah.
And so there are definitely times I didn't help myself either. And I would definitely take a few redos if I could, but you can't. And that's a lot of what the book is about. I wonder, you know, I think all of us were so overburdened. I know I was running a 3-person PR department by myself. Most teams don't have a single ops person. So I'm guessing you were pretty busy as well. But yeah. I wonder what your take or view on any of that was.
No, you know, it was definitely different. I remember correctly, a lot of mixes on the other teams as far as like PR with men and women, but we only had you.
Yeah.
And I will say that there were times when we would have meetings and we did have to take into consideration that you were in the meeting, or we had to think about what we were going to do for travel and how things were going to be accommodated for you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that you were a member of our team, but number one, you were public relations, and number two, you were a woman. And yeah, I mean, I was young. I didn't get it. I really didn't get it. I didn't understand the outliers. I didn't understand what was going on. Like, I didn't really get it because I had never been in this position before. I was never right. A person that had to make these decisions, or, you know, I like, yeah, she could be on our floor. Like, you know, when we go to the hotel, like, I don't care. Be in the room at the end of the hall, whatever. It's like, no, separate floor. And, you know, and just during the meetings, there was, you know, at times we'd ask you to leave. If you remember, you know, certain parts of the meetings. So it was different, and I never got it. And I didn't get it until later on. Much later on, like 10 years later on, did I say, oh, that's why we did okay, I guess. And it just was like, oh, it was eye-opening for me. But like you said, I was struggling so many things at the time. You know, yes. Driving a car and trying to read signs in German. Because at the time, there was no navigation on my phone. I was printing out, like, MapQuest directions and trying to put it into English, and then trying to figure out the German, and just started memorizing numbers of when to get on and when to get off. I couldn't drive a stick shift, and I had to figure out how to drive a stick shift. And it was just I had a cell phone that was in German, and it was like, I don't know what it's asking me to do here. It's a Nokia. It's a little Nokia.
Mm-hmm. Those are in the book.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was challenging. But I do also remember, for me, I felt like I had a connection with the coaches. I had a connection with the players. I didn't have a connection with the staff. I feel like you did. And I felt like at times I got alienated by everybody because it's like, oh, well, you know, careful what you tell Damien because he hangs out with the coaches. And then the coaches would be like, all right, Damien's got to go because he talks to the players too much. And then the staff was like, you know, we don't know where your loyalty resides. We don't know whose side you're on because you kick us out of meetings and you stay in the meetings. It's like, you know, so I tried to just take it for what it was worth because, like you said, we were all trying to get to the show. That's what it was all about. So I was trying to get to the show. I was shaking hands and kissing babies and doing whatever I had to do because when I got back, I wanted to be with the pros. I didn't want to do the NFL Europe thing anymore. This was supposed to be a buffer for when I got to the big lights. You know, but, you know, little did I know what really waited for me when we got back.
A podcast.
But no, a podcast. No, but no, it was
a bright light.
But no, it was, I do remember, like, hearing other stories. I remember hearing stories about other PR people on the other teams and some of the female workers fraternizing with players and fraternizing with coaches. And there being like a hard line that we set at the Galaxy is like, that's not going to happen here.
Right.
And it's just like, yeah, sure. But like I said, I did not think of it in the term. I didn't take it as seriously as I probably should have.
I don't recall having any issues with you whatsoever or with 99% of people, just to make sure that that's clear. It was I mean, first of all, I got my own room. I think I'm the only person that got my own room, which is a major advantage when you're living in a hotel for several months. But yeah, to have I my
you're on
boss,
the floor. You're on the 16th
I have my
floor.
Own floor by you're myself, on the 16th penthouse floor, floor.
I remember,
which was amazing. But to have that conversation with my boss, like to have my boss sit me down and be like, so I just need you to understand you can't sleep with any of the players. And I was like, I'm going to write it in my notebook. I'm going to put it down right here. Like press conference at 4, don't sleep with the players. Don't, I've got them both. Don't worry. And we had, this was, I mean, it's funny now, but I had a bit of a rocky start because I think our last training camp was in Tampa. I think our last night in Tampa, a bunch of the staffs went out together and I was hanging with a bunch of the other PR people, which is 4 people, I say a bunch. And some other staffers, I'll say, because I don't want it to be too specific. And one of the other women was like a little overserved. And so I went back to her hotel, which was not our hotel, with her to make sure that she got there safely. And en route, she vomited over me, my clothes, the cab, the hotel hallway, all of it. So I'm paying the cabbie, like probably my entire week's stipend, because you know how we were paid in NFL Europe, trying to clean his cab, right, with whatever's in my purse, getting her up to her hotel room, spending the night there with her, holding her hair, finding a pair of sweat shorts that I can go home in while I carry my skirt because it's covered in vomit. And I get back to our hotel, and our staff is in the lobby checking to make sure that players come in. So if you imagine what I look like at 3 a.m. holding my skirt in my hand, stumbling in like athletic shorts. And it was like, oh my God, this is the I think you were in the lobby with one of the coaches. And I just remember being like, I don't know how to explain this, but this is not what you think. I had it in my notebook not to sleep with any of the players. I promise that that's not what happened.
If I remember, we didn't even say anything. It was just like, oh, just keep going. Like,
oh, my
just,
God.
Because we were focused on the players. But I do think I remember that.
Things like that that were, a challenge, but do make for a good book. So that's the upside.
Well, definitely. And that kind of vivid imagery and storytelling is a hallmark, a highlight of your book, but we'll get you out of here on this one, Liz.
Oh, thank you.
The flashbacks, the vivid imagery, the technical language, but while not being like over and above everybody's heads, like it's very like you can visualize what's going on. Like if you've ever seen a game of football, you know exactly what's going on when you say that they line up in shotgun formation, that this, that, you know, like it's the detail is there. And it made me wonder.
Thank you.
Of course. Absolutely. Have you ever considered adapting The Snap into a screenplay, or have you pitched The Snap as a feature film? And if you put your amateur producer hat on there, if you wanted to cast the role of Poppy, who would you choose? I have an idea. I just want to hear what would you have to say.
Oh, okay. I'm going to want to hear your idea too.
Oh, definitely. Of course.
I have yes, I mean, every author wants that. That's like the dream, to have it adapted. I do have a film agent who's working on that. It's kind of like Fight Club. You're not supposed to talk about it. So it takes forever. So possibly in a couple of years, we'll be back here talking about the adaptation, which would be great. But for now, there's not a ton I can say about it. But in my head, I always picture, first of all, I always make my main characters not have red hair because I have red hair and I think people assume it's me. So Poppy is a dark brunette, and I always picture Melanie Lynskey. She's always my go-to for Poppy.
Interesting. It's actually funny that you stay true to it, you know, as the dark brunette. Like I was thinking more like in terms of like the strength of like personality and that, I would say Kate Hudson. Like I think she could probably pull it off.
Nice, I like that.
Yeah, I think the strength of her character and the strength of how you formed Poppy, I think she would do it the role justice.
Oh, thank you. I think you are onto something there, because I'm pretty sure she's in a show that's sports centric that's coming out in a year or so. I feel like it's a Mindy Kaling produced thing, and it's a person who, it's like family business type thing, and her brother was supposed to take over the team and is possibly in rehab, and so she steps in. But I think you're right there with the brightest minds of Hollywood, because that's who they cast.
Hey, you know, they know where to find me. And they know where to find me too. So
Yeah.
Elizabeth Staple, The Snap is out. Penguin Random House. Get yourself a copy. Audible, Amazon, wherever you get your books. Liz, thank you for coming on, joining us as the newest member of the In Crowd. And if you want to be the newest member of the In Crowd and join us on the In Route, hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast. Drop us a line on X at faderoutednz, and you can join us as well. And Liz, where can our guests, where can our fans follow you, and they can stay linked up with you and your events regarding the Snap?
Yeah, on Instagram is where I'm the most active. That's Elizabeth Staple Books, and my website is elizabethstaple.com.
Make sure you bookmark that, folks.
Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much with FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their graphic tees, hoodies, snapbacks, accessories, and more. Go to fckclout.com today and check out current season and past season merchandise for men and women. Get it while you can. That's fckclout.com. Check them out today. fckclout.com. Who's the best of the worst this week in sports? The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award.
All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. You know how it goes. We put up a poll on our X account, at FadeRouteDNZ, and our Instagram poll, at FadeRoutePodcast. Can you vote? And you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And the winner of said poll gets a shout-out on this here show and takes home the coveted-ass trophy. And do you know who took home the coveted-ass trophy last week, Dean?
I don't.
Clay Holmes.
That guy.
It's a low bar. It's a really low bar. Absolutely atrocious performance.
He got to save the game yesterday, I think.
Woohoo! Woohoo! You got Judge being the master, the man, the master, the ruler of the world. And Clay Holmes is just fucking things up left and right. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Alleged Superstar of the Week, D?
All right. So first up, I've got Kadarius Toney.
Oh, God.
Two-time Super Bowl champion and 2021 first-round pick by the Giants. Number 20 overall, was cut by the Chiefs today. Career statistics in 2 years, 82 receptions and 3 receiving touchdowns. In 2 years, Kadarius Toney, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, Desmond Ridder, another guy cut today. Ridder cut by the Cards 2 years after being the starter in Atlanta. He started 13 games for Atlanta last year. He was a third round pick. I foolishly paid over $200 for his rookie card. Oof. And I might have started him in some fantasy games. Desmond Ridder, you are my alleged superstar.
Bro, what the fuck?
At number three, Javi Baez, having season-ending hip surgery on his right hip. He played in only 80 games this year. His batting average is .184 with 6 home runs and 37 RBIs with an OPS below .600. And don't worry, folks, you still have 3 more years on his deal at $70 million. Javi Baez, you are my alleged superstar of the week. What do you got, Z?
Oh my God, that's fucking terrible. That's absolutely atrocious. El Mago, like, his game disappeared. Like, you want to talk about the magician? He made his own career disappear. Congratulations, Javi. Oh, my God. So, I'm going to start with the born Texas Little League coach. You're in the U.S. title game against Lake Mary, Florida. Pitcher's on the mound. He's cruising. Then all of a sudden, it's a little erratic. Right? You go out to the mound. Coach said, he's like, Coach, I'm hurt. My arm hurts. Can you get this next guy out? He's 12. That's not the right approach. It's like, go to the fucking bench. We'll figure it out. Not only did he pitch to the next batter, which he gave up a hit. He then proceeded to pitch to a couple more batters, still wild, still erratic. They finally took him out, put him in first base. He's still shaking his arm. He still can't throw the ball. No, the kid's done. You can't leave a kid in the game when he says he's hurt. Never, ever. Never, ever. If I was his parent, right, I would have been waiting for that coach and not to have a strongly worded conversation. What the fuck are you thinking? Born Texas Little League coach, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, the New York Giants. Preseason's over and not a single passing touchdown. Not a one. Not a one. A big fat donut for passing touchdowns for the New York Football Giants. Daniel Jones has looked better than he's ever looked because he grew a beard. Drew Lock, Tommy DeVito, zero passing touchdowns. A harbinger of things to come? Perhaps. New York Giants, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Jameis Winston is available, I'm just saying. And number three, the Chicago White Sox. The fastest team ever. Fastest team ever. Not even the 62 Mets got to 100 losses this fast. Congratulations, I guess. You are very close to having the worst record in Major League Baseball history. I'm not sure that's what Chris Getz drew up when he decided to take this job. We're going to make this team bad enough to move to Miami. Ah, fuck, there's a right team in Miami. Chicago White Sox, you are my alleged superstar of the week. I think we said our piece. Go to our X account at FadeRouteDNZ and our Instagram account at FadeRoutePodcast and you vote. And you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And for our nominees.
You're better than that. Just do better. Just do better.
This has been the Fade Route with DNZ. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast on Wednesday nights on Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to your podcast. So until next time, stay fade, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you liked what you heard and you want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave us a review, rate us 5 stars, turn on subscription notifications, and share on social media. Tell your friends and spread the word.